Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear viewers, we have been discussing the critique on the collection of the Quran narrative as is ascribed to the Caliph Usman and recorded by Imam Bukhari in his Al-Jami' al-Sahih. We have completed our critique in the previous episodes, and now in the 10th and final episode of this topic, inshallah, I'm going to try it and summarize the whole critique before you, and also then we can go on and try to find out and make an educated guess as to what exactly might have happened in the reign of Usman, given that the data which is recorded in this connection has serious flaws and has serious chain of narration issues as well. So let me start off by summarizing the whole critique which we have so far, I have so far presented before you, so that the whole critique comes before you in a nutshell. Now, the first criticism, if you can recall, was that the whole event of the collection of the Quran, or in the right frame, if we put it, the copying out of the Quran in the times of the Caliph Usman, it seems to be a highly improbable event, the way it has been narrated in Al-Jami' al-Sahih of Imam Bukhari. And again, this is very similar to what we saw in the collection of the Quran narrative in the times of the Caliph Abu Bakr, radiyallahu anhu, and also as recorded in Imam Bukhari in his Al-Jami' al-Sahih. In this regard, we find that Anas ibn Malik, he is the only person who narrates this whole narrative, the way it has been recorded in Imam Bukhari. He is the only person. And from him, the only person to narrate is Ibn Shahab Zuhri. This is in spite of the fact that Anas had more than 200 students, and only one person from among these students narrates this whole narrative. And this is something which is very strange, given the fact that the nature of this narrative was such that a number of people should have narrated it. We find that in the first two tiers, there are just single people reporting this whole narrative, which obviously casts doubt on the historicity of the whole narrative. Moreover, we also find that the primary works of hadith, like the Muwatta of Imam Malik and Al-Jami' al-Sahih of Imam Muslim, both these hadith works are absolutely devoid of any mention of this, these details which this narrative carry, in spite of the fact that both these books, they have chapters which relate to the Quran, and these chapters were the very right place and the very appropriate place in which, if something had happened in the times of the Caliph Usman, then it should have found mention in these respective books or these respective sections of these books. And we find various other details being recorded in these sections vis-a-vis the Quran, but we do not find any such copying out episode in the times of the Caliph Usman, which is quite strange. And we also know that the conditions of Imam Muslim in recording a narrative were lenient than those of his teacher, Imam Bukhari. And we also know that in Muwatta, Imam Malik has a number of narratives which he records from Ibn Shahab Zuhri. So all this makes a lot of, it really casts doubt as to why was this narrative, why didn't it find its mention in these two books. Now, not only the fact that these two books are devoid of the details which this narrative mentioned, also devoid are one of the two premier histories of early histories of the Muslims, and they include the Tabaqat of Ibn Sa'd and the Tariq of Tabari. And we do not find any mention of the details the way this event has been described in this narrative in both these books. Now, this is in stark contrast with the fact that the Ibn Sa'd's Tabaqat al-Kubra, which is his history book, he actually mentions the biographical accounts of the earlier Sahaba and the Tabi'un as well. And all the persons which figure in this narrative, they are described in Tabaqat al-Kubra. Their biographical accounts are described. Thus, we find the Caliph Usman, his biographical note in the Tabaqat. We also find Huzaifa ibn al-Yaman in this book, biographical note. And we also find biographical notes on the people who formed the committee of copying out, which included Zayd ibn Thabit, Sa'id ibn al-As, Abdullah ibn Zubair, and Abdurrahman ibn Haris. So all these four also find none of their biographies show that that any sort of role they played in collecting or copying out the Quran. Not only that, we also find Al-Ma'arif, which is Ibn Qutaybah's early history book. We also find it devoid of any mention. Similarly, Khalifa ibn Khayyat's tariqh is also devoid of any mention. So, all in all, this first point is that it is in the scenario that I've just described, it is very, very sketchy and very, very improbable that this event to have taken place the way it has been described, because if it would have taken place, then we would have find many people reporting it. We would have also find its mention in these hadiths and history books, which I have just alluded to. And this is something which we do not find. So the first point of critique, viewers, is that the improbability of this event, the nature and the way in which it has been reported and recorded in history shows that it is highly improbable that it took place the way it has been recorded by Imam Bukhari. Now, the second point in this regard is the questionable methodology which Usman, the Caliph رضي الله عنه, adopted in eradicating the differences in reading which have been reported in this narrative. Now, you would recall that this narrative has details which say that the difference in reading the Quran is the actual source which alarmed Huzaifa ibn al-Yaman, who was a general of the Caliph Usman, and he came to Usman and said that there are serious differences in reading the Quran between the armies of Syria and Iraq when they were fighting in the fronts of Armenia and Azerbaijan. So Usman then took whatever he did as the way it has been described in the narrative, that he made copies. But lo and behold, if these copies were made, then either they should have had vowel text or vowel markings on them so that people could have read them right in the right way, or he should have sent reciters with the copies so that the consonantal text could have been read with the right vowel sounds, because in the absence of these vowel sounds and in the absence of readers being sent, the consonantal text, as you all know, the skeletal text, can be read variously, and it can hardly be sufficient to eradicate any difference in reading. The only thing it can eradicate is perhaps the consonantal text. But again, as I said, that the differences which are reported in the scenario is that they were differing in reading, and this difference in reading could not have been eradicated by simply writing out the consonantal text and not also sending any reciter, because as you know that the consonantal text needs either a reciter or those vowel sounds so that it can be rightly and correctly pronounced, and to eliminate all and eradicate all differences. I had narrated before you that it is claimed that Zayd ibn Thabit was sent to Medina, Abdullah ibn Sa'ib was sent to Mecca, Mughira ibn Shubah was sent to Syria, Amir ibn Abd Qais was sent to Basra, and Abu Abdurrahman al-Sulami was sent to Kufa. These are the claims which have been made that these reciters were in fact sent with the copies to these five territories. But you recall that I had made a detailed survey of early Muslim history sources and had given you this conclusion that none of these five people, the way their histories have been reported in the earliest Muslim history books, say that they were sent with either of the copies which they say they were sent with. So therefore, this further, although as I said, although the claim is made that certain reciters were sent, but this claim lacks serious corroboration, and therefore, in the absence of this corroboration, this would be the second point of criticism, that how come a caliph of the stature of Usman, who was actually trying to eradicate differences in reading the Quran, ended up doing something which was hardly sufficient to eradicate these differences. And history says and history proves that no such precaution was taken by him which could have eliminated these differences. And in the presence of this, we can easily see and perhaps conclude that Usman would never have taken this step, and it would have never in the first place taken place. Otherwise, if he had done so, then he would have made sure that either the consonantal text was marked with vowel sounds, or he would have sent reciters. And neither we see that the consonantal text had any vowel text, as is proven in history, because these vowel sounds were introduced later on. And nor do we see that any reciters were sent with these books, with these copies or codices, in spite of the fact that the claim has been made, which I have just described. So this is the second point of criticism that should remain in consideration. Now the third point in consideration is that, or the third point of critique is that, as you all know, that this narrative says that serious differences arose between the armies of Kufa and Syria when they were fighting on the fronts of Armenia and Azerbaijan. And the narrative says that these differences actually related to the difference in reading the Quran. Different people of both armies were reading differently. The people of Syria would be reading something which the people of Kufa were not aware of, and similarly vice versa. So therefore, this is what this narrative says, and this is what actually alarmed Huzaifa when he came to the Caliph Usman and then requested him to take notice of this situation. Now, you would also remember that I had made a detailed survey of Muslim historical sources earlier on and had divulged this before you, that the sources of the first six centuries, they are absolutely without any mention of any difference of opinion or differences of debate arising amongst armies on the basis of variously reading the Quran. No such thing is reported in the earliest Muslim histories of the first five or six centuries. On the contrary, what is most probably, which was more probable that happened vis-a-vis the nature of difference between the armies, was that they actually differed on the issue of the spoils of war. It was not on the differences of reading the Quran, but on the issues of spoils of war that the two armies were daggers drawn with each other, and they wanted a certain decision that to be taken in this regard, which I've already described upon earlier on. So you would see that the way this narrative describes that actually the differences were because of the difference in reading the Quran. This is not corroborated by history books. On the other hand, what these history books do corroborate is that it was the spoils of war which was the cause of this variation or this severe difference between the two armies. So again, this is something which casts doubt on at least one part of the narrative, in which these differences are cited in reading the Quran to be the source of Usman's whole endeavor. Now, the fourth point is that we also find that in this narrative, it says that a missing verse was found at this time, a missing verse of Surah Ahzab. Now, again, this is something very, very improbable because in this scenario, we would be led to believe that the first two caliphs, Abu Bakr and Umar, or even Hafsa, with whom this Mus'haf or this codex lied in the times of Usman, till it reached him, that none of them actually read this Mus'haf, because if they would have read it, then certainly this missing verse would have come to their notice. And even if this is accepted, then it is further, the situation is further complicated by the fact that in spite of the huge amounts of efforts made by the Caliph Umar in particular of spreading and disseminating the Quran to various territories, that this verse be found even in written form with a single person, Khuzaimah ibn Thabit, as the narrative says. And it is highly improbable because the way the Caliph Umar went about spreading the Quran, he commissioned people, he gave them scholarships to spread the Quran and its copies to various areas in his own era. So by the time we reached the times of the Caliph Usman or his era, how would it be possible that a single verse will be found in written form, as our historians claim, with a single person in the presence of this huge dissemination work? It is highly improbable that one person just says that it is the verse of the Quran which has been missing is with me, and I am going to bring it to you your notice. Moreover, we also have seen I was criticizing this whole narrative, that the Zushahadatain narrative, which says that the weight of Khuzama's witness was twice the others, and hence it was because of this that, because he carried the weight of two witnesses, that this verse was accepted from him. We have also seen that narrative lacks serious authenticity. It has reliability issues, not only its text, but also its chain of narration. So all in all, we can see this fourth point is also very important, that the improbability of the missing verse of Surah Ahzab in the times of the Caliph Usman. Now, the fifth point of critique is that if ever a collection was had been made by Abu Bakr, it would have been in state custody. And it is hard to believe that it did not remain in state custody. It was passed on to the Caliph, after the Caliph Umar, to the personal possession of Hafsa Rizitala Anha. So it is very hard to believe that it still resided with Hafsa, a state collection residing with Hafsa, the daughter of the Caliph Umar and wife of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Why would it reside with Hafsa when it was a state-owned material? And moreover, once Usman obtained it from her to make copies, why did he return it? In fact, in some of the instances, he had to assure Hafsa that he would return it, and only on that condition did Hafsa hand over the copy to him. So why, this is a big why which arises in this case, and therefore it casts doubt on the narrative as well. Now the sixth point of criticism in this regard is that we also find this narrative speaking regarding the script of the word, that there was a difference of opinion regarding the script of the word. But before that difference of opinion, we also find a principal statement which says, in which Usman is actually telling the committee that if there is a difference of opinion between the committee members, then Zaid's opinion, if Zaid differs with the rest of the three people, then Zaid's opinion has to be overruled. Now, this is obviously something very strange, because Zaid was the person allegedly who had written down the Quran in times of the Caliph Abu Bakr, and he was adept in writing the Quran. He was also the scribe of the Prophet, as we know. So why would Usman ask the committee that if there was a difference of opinion, that then Zaid's opinion should be overruled? This is something very important. Moreover, why would Zaid leave out something in writing which he heard directly from the Prophet, maybe in writing or while hearing something from him? So why would he give up this, that was something which he, why would he tolerate the fact that he should be overruled in writing when he was the person who had directly written the Quran in the times of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and also in the times of Caliph Abu Bakr? So again, this is something very strange. Now in this regard, we also find that the narrative of Tirmizi reports that there was a difference of opinion in the committee between the word tabut. And it says that Zaid ibn Sabit insisted on its spelling as a tabu with a ha in the end, while the committee members said it should be a tabut with a ta in the end. And the matter was referred to Usman. So the question which arises here, that if copies were being made from the Caliph Abu Bakr's Mus'haf or his codex, then whatever would have been written in that codex would have been the way it had been written, either with a ha or a ta, that would have been copied the way it was written. So if the word was written as a tabu, then why would Usman have insisted that it should be written as a tabut? And if the word had been a tabut, then why would have Zaid insisted that it should have been a tabu, as the narrative says? So again, this is something very strange, that why this difference of opinion would have arisen, because actually what the committee was doing, it was copying out the Quran, merely copying it out, its text, and a tabut or a tabu, both, whatever the case was, it should have been the exact replica. It's strange that this difference of opinion should have arisen, and it's strange that this overruling also should have been made. Now, what we also find as a seventh point of criticism in this regard is that you would remember that I had discussed alternative accounts of collection, in the times of Caliph Usman. So we had this standard narrative in which Imam Bukhari was told us that copies were made of the Mus'haf of Abu Bakr, which resided with Hafsa at the time of Caliph Usman. But the alternative accounts of collection, if you recall, I had read out at least 16 people, and with more than 16 accounts, because some of them had described more than one account. And all of them were actually describing a fresh collection by Usman, except for one, which actually described that the collection was a copy of Aisha's of Muhammad Mus'haf, which resided with Aisha. So barring that narrative, the rest of the narrative speak that a fresh collection was made. It was not a copying out of the Mus'haf of Afsa رضي الله عنها. A new collection was being made by Usman. He actually went about collecting the Quran anew, afresh. He may have used some material from Abu Bakr's Mus'haf رضي الله عنه, but the fact is that he went upon the job by actually collecting the Quran afresh. It was not merely copying out issue. So these alternative accounts again are very strange, that why there are stark differences with the main narrative. And we had also seen that amongst these alternative accounts, there were serious differences. We had categorized them into various categories, and we had seen that all these categories differed with one another, and within the categories we also found narratives themselves differing with one another. So this is the sixth or the seventh point of criticism, that these alternative accounts, they depict a fresh collection. Now, as far as the eighth and final point of criticism is concerned, we saw that the chains of narrations of the narratives which we have discussed, the chain of narration of the primary narrative of the collection, the chain of narrative of the independent Surah Azab narratives. We had certain narratives which independently just mentioned the fact that these verse of Surah Ahzab had been found in times of the Caliph Usman. So that narrative, the Zush-Shahadatain narrative, and then the alternative account collection narratives. So all these four category of narratives, we saw that there were serious flaws in their chains of narration. And as far as the primary narrative is concerned, and also the narrative which mentioned independently the missing verse of Surah Ahzab, both of them had the serious flaw that both of these categories, the variants of both of these categories, are heavily dependent on Ibn Shahab Zuhri, someone who we have been critically reviewed in our earlier chapter when we were discussing topic number three earlier on. We have seen how his personality is impugned with various issues of Irsal, Idraj, Tadlis, and then reporting different things differently to different people. So this narrative and the Surah Ahzab narrative, independent Surah Ahzab verse narrative, they are heavily dependent on the chain of narration. This chain of narration is heavily dependent on Ibn Shahab Zuhri. So viewers, in the presence of these 8 points of criticism, which I've just summarized before you, it is absolutely uncertain and very hard to make out or regard this narrative to be reliable. And we therefore would be doing injustice to hadith principles and history principles if we think that the information which is conveyed by this narrative is of any reliability. So now the question is that if this narrative has these problems and therefore we cannot regard it to be a reliable narrative, then what exactly is the conclusion should we draw vis-a-vis what happened in the times of the Caliph Usman? Now, before we actually reach this conclusion phase, let me just present some more data before you, some alternative data, and most of this data is something in which we do not find the personality of Ibn Shahab Zuhri, almost all of this data, in fact. And this data shows that perhaps something did happen in the time of the Caliph Usman, as people would praise him for his work, and people did actually come out with and shower their praises as to what Usman did. But what he did, obviously, something we have to make an educated guess later on. But for the moment, let me present this some more data before you, which is not based on Ibn Shahab Zuhri's personality and which is independently reported by various people, and see what we can gather and make out from this data. So the first of this is, you can see, is found in Abu Ubaid's Fazail al-Quran, and this is a narrative on the authority of Ali ibn Abi Talib, and he says that قال علي لو وليت لفعلت في المصاحف الذي فعل عثمان. He says that had I been in charge, we've already seen a part of this narrative earlier in our talks as well, that he says that had I been in charge, I would have done the same thing with the masahif as what Usman did. So Ali himself is commenting that he would have done something, the same thing which Usman did. And what he did, as I said, is something we still need to gather later on. Now we have Hassan al-Basri, his narrative also before us. And we know that Hassan lived from 210 Hijra. And this narrative has been reported by Ibn Asakir in his Tariqh Madinah Dimashq. And the words are, it starts off with the fact that Humaid bin Manhab says that he met Hassan, and then he describes what he said. So he says, قَالَ زُرْتُ الْحَسَنِ بْنِ الْحَسَنِ فَخَلَوْتُ بِهِ يَوْمًا فَقُلْتُ لَهُ يَا عَبَا سَعِيدٍ أَمَا تَرَى مَا النَّاسِ فِيهِ مِنَ الْإِخْتَلَافِ فَقَالَ لِي يَا أَبَا يَحْيَى أَصْلَحَ أَمْرَ النَّاسِ أَرْبَعَ فَذَكَرَهُمْ ثُمَّ قَالَ وَعُثْمَانُ بْنُ عَفَّانَ حَيْثُ جَمَعَ النَّاسَ عَلَى هَذِهِ الْقِرَاءَةِ وَقَدْ كَانُوا يَقْرَؤُونَهُ عَلَى سَبْعَةِ أَحْرُفٍ فَكَانَ هَؤُلَاءِ يَلْقُونَ هَؤُلَاءِ فَيَقُولُونَ قِرَاءَتُنَا أَفْضَلُ مِنْ قِرَاءَتِكُمْ حَتَّى كَادَ بَعْضُهُمْ أَنْ يُكَفِّرَ بَعْضًا فَجَمَعَهُمْ عَلَى هَذَا الْحَرْفِ وَلَوْلَا مَا فَعَلَ عُثْمَانُ مِنْ ذَلِكَ لَأَلْحَدَ النَّاسَ فِي الْقُرْآنِ إِلَى يَوْمِ الْقِيَامَةِ. So this is what Hassan Basri has said, and a simple translation in this regard would be, Humaid ibn Manhab says, I met Hassan ibn Abul Hassan alone one day and said, O Abu Sa'id, do you see how people are differing with one another? He replied, O Abu Yahya, four things rectify the state of people in this regard. Then he mentioned them. And amongst them he said, and Usman ibn Affan, when he gathered people on this reading, and they used to read the Quran on seven ahruf, so one group of them would meet another and say, our reading is better than yours, until matters reached the extent that they would call each other a disbeliever on this basis. So Usman gathered people on this reading, and if he had not done so, people would have left the right path regarding the Quran till the day of judgment. So this is what we find Hasan al-Basri saying. And obviously, he's alluding to the Sabat al-Ahraf narrative, which we ourselves are going to critically review in our later sessions. But for the moment, what we can gather from him is that he's actually praising Usman for certain things that he did. Now, Abu Mijlaz, Lahiq ibn Humayd, he died in 110 Hijra, and his narrative is recorded by Ibn Abi Dawud in his Kitab al-Masahif. And his words are, an Abi Mijlaz, Abi Mijlaz, an Abi Mijlaz qal, lawla anna Usman katab al-Qur'an la'alfayta an-nasa yaqra'una ash-shi'r, which means that had Usman not written the Mus'haf, you would have found people reading poetry, which obviously means that they would have enjoyed reading poetry more, would have indulged in poetry more because of the huge difference of the Quran, which they would have seen in their era. So it's just a comment by Abu Mijlaz, Lahiq ibn Humayd. Next we find Hammad ibn Salma. He died in 166 Hijra, and his narrative is recorded by Abu Shamma in his Al-Mushrid al-Wajiz. And he says, Kana Usman fil Mus'haf ka Abi Bakr fil Ridda, which means that Usman is to the Mus'haf what Abu Bakr is to apostasy. So he's actually praising that Usman did something for the Mus'haf, and what he did is as praiseworthy as what Abu Bakr in his times did for apostasy or eradicating apostasy. So obviously this again is something of a praise by Hammad ibn Salma. Next we find Abdurrahman ibn Mahdi. He says that, and his narrative is actually recorded by Ibn Abi Dawud in his Kitab al-Masaif. So he says, Samaytu Ahmad ibn Sanan actually says that he's heard this from Abdurrahman ibn Mahdi. And he says, Yaqul khaslatan li Usman ibn Affan laysata li Abi Bakr wala li Umar. Sabruhu nafsah hatta qutila mazluma wa jam'ahu an-nas ala al-mushaf. Which means that there are two characteristics, Abdurrahman ibn Mahdi says that there are two characteristics in Usman which are not found in Abu Bakr or Umar. And then he spells out those characteristics. His perseverance until he was murdered. We know that he was murdered in a very brutal fashion, and he did not retaliate. And the second is, this narrative also mentions this fact. It says that his perseverance until he was murdered, even though he was innocent, and he gathered people on one Mus'haf. So we find a person like Abdurrahman ibn Mahdi, who actually lived from 135 to 198 Hijra, praising Usman in this matter. We also find certain other comments of praise, but I'm leaving them out just to give you this idea that actually Usman radiallahu anhu did something for the Mus'haf or for the betterment of the Mus'haf or the cause of the Mus'haf, which people did praise. However, the way it has been reported in Bukhari's narrative, that does stand questionable. But please keep this data in mind. And let me also add a further point or piece of information before you, and that is that in the times of Hajjaj ibn Yusuf, when he was the governor of Kufa, we know that he also launched a massive campaign to eradicate certain spurious Masaif, in which he, in his opinion, he actually appointed a three-member committee, and he gave that committee the task that they should burn and destroy all the Masaif which were not in accordance with the Usmanic Mus'haf. And he also said that the committee members should pay a compensation of 60 dirhams to people from whom they confiscate these Masaif and burn them. And for each Mus'haf, they should pay a confiscation, a compensation of 60 dirhams. So we see that later on after Usman, even Hajjaj making it sure in his times that the Caliph, whatever Caliph Usman did, it continues, and any deviation is in this regard is also checked. So this is also a very important piece of information. Now, viewers, also let me give some more information to you vis-a-vis the fact that some Masaif that were written, we find difference of opinion among our historians that Masaif were, various number of Masaif were sent to various areas of the empire. And some say the number was 4 or 5. We just go about that and see. But this again shows that Usman actually sent out these Masaif to various territories. Now, as far as this number is concerned, it cannot be said with certainty because there are a number of reports which say. Now, also let me point out these reports so that you can see how various historians are reporting various number of Masaif being spread in the territory. So Hamza ibn Habib al-Zayyad, we find that in his Abu Nabi Dawud, his Kitab al-Masaif, is saying that Usman made 4 copies. One was sent to Kufa. It was placed with a person from the Murad tribe. It remained with him until he wrote his Musaf from it. And according to Ibn Bashkawal, this has been recorded by Tilmisani, he's in Afutib. The copies made were 4, and they were sent to Kufa, Mecca, Basra, and Syria. And Ad-Dani also records that in the opinion of most authorities, the copies made were 4. And Dani has recorded this in his Al-Muqni. Now, as far as Ibn Hajar and Asyuti are concerned, Ibn Hajar, he says that in his Fathul Bari and Asyuti in his Al-Itqan, that the copies made were 5. So we find a person, people like them, who are themselves historians, that the number of copies made were actually 5. And now Zurqani, in his Manahil Irfan, records the opinion of Ibn Ashir and the author of Zadul Qurra, that the copies made were actually 6. And one of them was called the Imam, which was kept by Usman for his personal use, and the other 5 were sent to Mecca, Medina, Syria, Kufa, and Basra. So this is what these people report. Now, we also find Abu Hatim al-Sajistani in his in Zurqani, in Manahil Irfan, Zurqani reporting that according to Abu Hatim al-Sajistani, Usman actually wrote out 7 Masahif when he collected the Quran. He sent them to Mecca, 1 to Mecca, 1 to Syria, 1 to Yemen, 1 to Bahrain, 1 to Basra, 1 to Kufa, and retained 1 in Medina. And according to one opinion by Ibn Arabi, the copies were 7. So he too says that the copies were 7. And here's we have in other reports as well. Thus we find Ibn Jazri and Dr. Shawqi Zaif. Ibn Jazri in his An-Nashr fil Qiraat al-Ashr and Shawqi Zaif in his preface to the Kitab al-Sabah of Ibn Mujahid saying that the copies made were actually 8. So one of them was retained by Usman personally and the other were sent to Kufa, Basra, Yemen, Mecca, Medina, Syria, and Bahrain. So we find Ibn Jazri and Shawqi saying that the copies made were 8. Now, we have a person of the stature of Yaqubi, another historian, in his Tariq saying that the number of copies that were made were actually 9, and they were sent to Kufa, Basra, Mecca, Medina, Egypt, Syria, Bahrain, Yemen, and Al Jazeera. So this is what we find in the case of Al-Yaqubi. So again, this data needs to be considered that in the first case, we find comments from various people regarding praising Usman that he did something for the collection for the preservation of the Quranic text. Next, we find a person of the stature of Hajjaj ibn Yusuf, forcefully implementing the Usmanic text or forcefully at least destroying people. Texts who were not in conformity with Usman's text. And then we find this historical piece of information that various copies were sent out, the number of copies varying from 4 to 9 by various historians. So in the light of these details, one is compelled to conclude that Usman did something for the cause of the Quran in some way and took measures for its preservation. And perhaps what can be concluded is that he did find some variation in some copies, some spurious issues in some copies, and in all probability, these related to certain wrong recitals of Quranic verses, or you can say abandoned recital verses, because we know that the Quran was compiled afresh. It was given a new compilation, and during this second compilation, some of the recitals of the previous verses might have changed or been cancelled. And the Sahaba would still have the Arza-i-Ula with them, the Arza-i-Ula recitation with them of parts of the Quran. So they might have insisted on that recitation because they would have heard it directly from the Prophet. However, as you know, that there was an Urza al-Akhira as well, in which the Quran was given the final shape and some of the verses being abrogated, again, some of the verses being changed, it must have been changed. And some of the Musahif in the times of the Caliph Usman must have surfaced, which had these previous qira'ats on them. And this is perhaps what he did, that he destroyed those spurious copies. And also, viewers, this should be taken into consideration that as the Caliph of Osman, when he saw perhaps that some difference of opinion was taking place, or some spurious texts were being read by some people and they were insisting on their reading as well, then he might have embarked upon a campaign of writing the Masahif and sending it to various parts of the territory. So it was just his own role as a disseminator of the Quran. He himself, as a person or the in charge of the Muslim empire in his own times, as was the case with other caliphs as well, that they did their job in spreading the Quran. We know that the Caliph Umar in his time spread the Quran by appointing teachers of the Quran, would go to people and teach them the Quran. So in a similar way, Usman also undertook his share by actually disseminating copies of the Quran to various parts of the empire. So this is something which we can see. And he must have written out the Quranic text as well, so that if there was any difference of opinion regarding the previous qira'at, at least they could be taken care of. He would have removed any abrogated or inauthentic verse by writing these copies. He would also have set right the arrangement of the Quran if there was any difference in some of the copies. And he would have also corrected any verse which conflicted with the true consonantal text. But as far as the reading of the text was concerned, the oral tradition, or the oral tradition of reading the Quran, was fully in vogue. It did not require any vowel marks. So all in all, we can say in by summary that Usman basically in his own times preserved the Quranic text in various ways. Some differences did perhaps arise, but not only did he preserve it by writing some of the text, but he also disseminated the text of the Quran, the written text of the Quran, in his the various parts of the empire. But there was no serious threat to the Quranic text going extinct the way it has been reported, or differences of opinion the way it has been reported in this particular narrative, that people were actually seriously debating what the Quran is and what it is not. This is what the whole narrative gives us, the picture, and the fact that there was a certain verse which was also missing. Perhaps, as I said, what actually happened, and this again is an educated guess that I am trying to make, and you have all the right to differ with me, but in the presence of the spurious data, or the data which we cannot rely on in the matters of Caliph Usman's collection, and in the presence of data which I just read out before you regarding the copies of the Quran, regarding Hajjaj's endeavor, and regarding the fact that people praised Usman, so he must have played his role in disseminating the Quran and in obviously writing out the Quran in certain aspects, so that some of the spurious verses or spurious text of the Quran which might have surfaced in his times, in which people were actually insisting on the first recital of the Quran or the chronological recital of the Quran, he would have taken serious notice of that, and he would have tried to root it out. So this is what, in my opinion, perhaps did take place in the Quran in the era of the Caliph Usman رضي الله عنه. أقول قولي هذا وأستغفر الله لي ولكم ولسائر المسلمين والمسلمات.